Sunday morning, we were in Philadelphia together, not literally, but as we were going through the seven churches in the book of Revelation, we found ourselves on the sixth of seven locations along the postal route there in Asia Minor. And that, of course, brought us together to study the church that was in Philadelphia, a small community there in the ancient time of about 95 AD. It was a church there in the seven that really stood out as one of only two churches, actually, among the seven that received these letters, that got no correction from Christ at all. It was only encouragement. And that reminds us, of course, that a healthy church is entirely possible. Sometimes it seems that they're not, that they're so few and far between that maybe there is no hope at all for such a church to exist. But of course it is. It's just not common. A church can be healthy. The church in Philadelphia certainly was healthy. They were a viable little church. And theirs was actually a church that a lot of Christians, even in our modern age, are looking for and would prefer if they had the choice. And they're just so rare that it seems Philadelphia really stands out to us and gets our attention when we read through this series. I wonder if the folks in Philadelphia realize that. I would suppose that when you go to a church that is as good as theirs was, that when it comes down to it, had nothing really outstanding about them that was worthy of condemnation or correction, but everything about them that was worthy of commendation and encouragement, you got to wonder if the people who went there actually felt that way. I think sometimes we take it, take things for granted, and we could belong to a very healthy church, a viable church, a wonderful church, a God-approved church, and still feel a tinge of discouragement from time to time, hopelessness even, despair. And I think it's churches like that that Jesus has his attention on, and he, at least in this case, comes to give them the encouragement that they needed. It's a very encouraging letter, because in this letter, Jesus is actually inviting them to advance as a ministry, to take their church, their ministry to the next level. They're being promoted, if you will. And that's, in my world, that's a very exciting thing, a very encouraging thing here. And again, somewhat rare, but that's what they were experiencing there. As a church, most churches, I'd like to believe, desire growth. Lots of books written about it. There's a lot of strategies being employed to foster church growth and the development of greater ministry. And we, even here, we pray for opportunities like that, or at least we ought to be. And a lot of discouragement can ensue when these things don't appear to be happening. There is no growth to observe. There doesn't seem to be anything developing, and the attempts that are made don't seem to gain any traction. There hasn't been any real great opportunities as of late, and so we can sometimes be a bit discouraged. But that wasn't necessarily the case anymore for those in Philadelphia. Jesus was presenting them with new opportunities. He says, "I have set before you an open door." That, of course, is a term that we even use 2,000 years later or so to indicate that there is new opportunities on the horizon, that there is encouragement to be had, that there is a chance for us to step forward and to move forward and to advance as a church or as a ministry and even individually as a Christian. And so Jesus says, I've set before you an open door. And in at least here in the text, it says, for you have little strength. The word for is, as I mentioned on Sunday, a very interesting word. The Greek is hoti. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right, but I do know that it's a conjunction. It's a word in grammar that means because. And according to well, it's the same word as in verse 10, because. And I do know that it's a word that, according to definition, is one that added to a speaker's words to show what ground he gives for his opinion. Okay, so Jesus is now going to give grounds for his opinion. He says, I've opened a door for you, and I'm about to tell you why. For you have little strength. Because you have little strength. In fact, that's the way that the Holman Christian Standard Bible actually translates it. In that version, it says, because you have limited strength and have kept my word and have not denied my name, look, I have placed before you an open door. So that's the reason that he's given them this opportunity, is because they have little strength, among other things. So there are reasons why Jesus, at this point in their ministry, I'm not exactly sure, but it seems to be already decades in, is finally, at this point now, holding the door open for them. There is a point in ministry now he is giving them opportunity because, and then he lists them, and here they are, because you have little strength. That's the first one. It's perhaps the most prominent of them. It's given first mention in a list of three reasons. You have little strength. This is so important. And again, this isn't corrective. Jesus isn't chiding them. Oh, you're so weak. You have so little strength. You're so... This is not correction. This is commendation. Jesus is commending them for having little strength. This is a plus. This is to their advantage. Oh, that's so hard for us to believe sometimes, that weakness is to our advantage, when everything in us wants to believe strength is more advantageous when it comes to ministry, when it comes to vocation, when it comes to anything. We believe that strength is the virtue, not weakness. And Jesus comes and commends them for their weakness. Being weak does not get you in trouble with Jesus. It actually puts you in a position to be blessed. Because weak people, by necessity, depend on strong people. And that's exactly where God comes into the picture. He's the strong one upon whom we must depend. And we don't when we're strong ourselves. We do, however, more often when we're weak. And that's true of a person, an individual. That's also true of a fellowship, a church. A church that can operate on its own resources has no need to draw upon God. And that's the problem. And so, generally speaking, they don't. The church doesn't draw upon God. They don't look to Jesus. And that's probably why church has such a reputation for being unexciting. There's a lot going on there, but it's not got anything to do with God. It's not miraculous. It's not supernatural. It's predictable. It's calculated. It may be impressive according to human standards and by human comparison, but when we look to what God is capable of, it pales. Strength that we oftentimes rely upon, the self-reliance that we're so familiar with, all that does is alienates a church from God's blessing. We can depend ourselves, and that's very comfortable because we know what we're capable of and we can play it safe, but all that does is to remove from us the blessing that God has intended for us as Christians in this life. It can actually keep hidden a lot of wonderful God-given opportunities that you didn't even know were there. How much is in store for us as a church, and how much could be made available to us if we would finally allow ourselves to be weakened beneath God's planned trajectory for our life and for our ministry, rather than to be seeking the strength that makes us feel safe. There is so much in store for us if we allow ourselves to be weakened beneath God's hand. Philadelphia was at a point in their ministry where they were perfectly weak. And so Jesus sees them as now ready to move forward. They were also submissive. Jesus says, not only do you have little strength, but you have also kept my word. That's submission. Those who, in a culture that offers us plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D, plan E, and all the way on through the 26th letter of the alphabet, Jesus says, this is my plan, this is my word. And for any of those who keep his word over and against all the other options that the world gives to us, Jesus commends. That requires submission on our part. And they were submissive. They had been being submissive to Jesus' word. And on top of that, they were loyal to Jesus himself. They hadn't denied his name. They were loyal. Now, these are the qualities of a church that's ready to advance upon the world. Ready to advance upon the world. They are weak. They are submissive. And they are loyal. You find a church that has those three attributes, that is a church that is ready to take the next step toward fulfilling God's purpose in their community. This is a church that's ready to experience the fullness of their life in following Christ. That goes for the individual as well. Those who are dependent upon Christ, those who are submissive to Christ, those who are loyal to Christ, can expect Jesus to endorse their moving forward in life rather than having to restrain them and hold them back continually, which he will do. There are times when you find no open doors, but rather closed doors. And we again discussed that on Sunday as well. Sometimes doors close. And I brought up the idea here that if Jesus is the one that was now opening the door for the church in Philadelphia after many years, then it was also Jesus that had been, up until that point, keeping the doors closed. So Jesus is the one here pictured as holding the keys. He opens the doors, and if he opens them, no one can shut them. He shuts doors, and if he shuts them, you can't open them. And so there are really two things that I'd like to highlight here that can prevent a local church like yours, like mine, from moving forward together as a fellowship. There are two things. One is when the door gets shut. And again, I dealt with this on Sunday. I listed three reasons why God himself might be shutting a door on you. Personally, three reasons why God would see it fit to shut a door on a church corporately and not allow them to advance, allow no forward progress. And very briefly here, the first of those three reasons why God might shut a door in your life or in your ministry is because the direction isn't right. You're not supposed to go down that path. God doesn't want you to go down that path. He wants to protect you from the harm of continuing on down that road. And he wants to open up the blessing of getting it right and going down the right path. And so he closes a door. The direction isn't right. And I used Paul as an illustration because Paul presents himself as an illustration in Acts chapter 16, where he tried to visit Asia. God stopped him, closed the door, so to speak. He turned his sights on Bithynia. The Spirit of Jesus stopped him from going in that direction too. And then through a dream, he determined that God wanted him to go into Macedonia. And through Macedonia, then the gospel was really brought to Europe, had an inroads to the to Europe. And so God redirected the Apostle Paul through the closing of doors. The second reason why God may close doors in a person's life or in the life and future of a church is because the timing isn't right. Maybe the direction is good, but the timing is a little off. This is like a five-year-old child who wants to be a cop or wants to be a nurse. There's nothing wrong with aiming in that direction, per se, but the timing is terrible. No community wants to be patrolled by five-year-olds. No hospital wants to be staffed with, five-year-old children. There's more maturity needed, more time to develop, more training. And so Jesus, in the case of Philadelphia, had waited some 30 years, perhaps, to provide the Christians there with the opportunity that he's now inviting them into. Because churches need to be ready for what's coming, and who knows what will happen if Philadelphia goes down the road and goes through the open door. And Jesus does know, and so that's why he was taking his time and preparing them before he actually opened the door. Third reason why God might shut doors is because the people aren't right. They're just not the right people for the job. I think God gives opportunities to some churches that aren't right for other churches. God will give opportunities to other churches that aren't meant for us. They're unique to them. We're not to have a hand in that, or they're special to us, but other churches aren't necessarily given those opportunities. That's what he's doing to Philadelphia. He's giving them opportunities that were unique to Philadelphia. He didn't give those opportunities to Sardis. He didn't give those opportunities to Pergamum. He didn't give those opportunities to Laodicea. These are unique to the people in Philadelphia. And there's a reason for that. And so God will shut doors when he needs to shut doors. And so what that means for us is that we as a church need to appreciate the opportunities that God does give to us when he gives them, because not every church gets them. I hope you realize that we do belong to a church that, at least in God's eyes, is very unique. He made us to be us. He gave our ministry the shape it has because it's, by his design, meant to look like that. Not every church looks like ours, and not every church should look like ours, nor should we look like every other church. We're unique to the community in which we've been stationed. We are unique to the people that God has brought into our ministry to serve and to bring life to the ministry out of which we operate. There's a lot of things going on here that we need to appreciate because God has given these opportunities to us that maybe he hasn't given to other churches in our community or many other even in the world. So as I said before, there are two things really that can prevent a church from moving forward. The first, as I've explained again, is that the door gets shut. That's the first of two reasons why a church might not be moving forward, because God simply shut the door. But notice in the case of Philadelphia, Jesus said of the door that he opened for them, he said, now that I've opened it, nobody can shut it. It's not going to be shut. So for them, if they didn't move forward, it wasn't because God shut the door. Okay? So we can't always blame our inactivity or our failure to go forward. We can't always blame that on God having closed doors on us. If we fail to advance, there may be a different reason. And for a lot of other churches, the other reason that they're not moving forward, it's not because God shut the door on them. Some churches don't move forward because the people in that church balk at moving forward, even though the door has been opened. So God is standing there. Jesus has flung the door wide open, but the church stands in the doorway, looks out into the world beyond, and draws back. They prefer to keep things the way that they already are and always have been. They're afraid to go forward. Now, I'll tell you, if a church doesn't step through the door that Jesus is holding open for them, it's not always because God stopped them. They sometimes, oftentimes, stop themselves. I wonder how many churches no longer exist, not because they were met with violence or faced with opposition and persecution, but actually the reason they're no longer in existence is because they were given opportunities. They're extinct because Jesus invited them to move forward, and the opportunity he presented them with scared them, and they were just too afraid to change. Churches die when that happens. By not going forward, they atrophy. It may be scary. I can't imagine that Philadelphia didn't feel a little bit of apprehension in what the future held for them, but I believe that they did step forward. A healthy church that's healthy enough to be invited forward ought to be healthy enough to actually move forward when invited. So do you find yourself right now becoming familiar with the closed door aspects of following Jesus? Do you feel like at every turn there is a no, I can't go in that direction? Jesus said, no, you can't move forward. God says, no, I'm closing door after door after door. Do you feel like that you're becoming familiar with what it's like to have doors closed? Is that you? Are you stuck? Do you feel stuck? What exactly then, if that's the case, are you doing in this season of life? Maybe doors are closed for you and God isn't letting you move forward. Well, that's fine. Do you trust him in his decision? And what are you doing as you wait for a door to open? Are you learning to depend upon Jesus? Are you learning to be patient before God? Are you learning to be less self-reliant? Because maybe you're too strong, and that's why the doors are closing. Are you practicing submission while you wait? Are you demonstrating loyalty to Jesus in spite of the frustration you may feel at those closed doors? Are you the type of person that just goes ahead and creates your own destiny and kicks down doors so that you can go through and expand your life as you wish in directions that you choose? And let me ask you this now, corporately, okay? So individually, what are you facing right now as far as closed and open doors go? But as a church, we need to ask ourselves as well, if Jesus were to begin opening doors for us right now at this church, would you be ready to walk forward with the rest of us through that open door? Are you ready for change? Or you do you have a track record of being resistant to it? These are things that I think are presented to us by Christ and His Holy Spirit through this short little letter that was written so long ago to a faithful church in a city called Philadelphia. Because these are issues that we face, have faced, and will face. Are we ready to move forward?